Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you for joining me in the last 3 years that I've been doing this show. I just realized recently that I started doing this show, It's All About Food, back on March 25th, 2009. And so that makes this week my third-year anniversary. And there have been 145 shows of It's All About Food since we started. And I've spoken with 155 unique guests. There were a few that I brought back several times, but out of the 168 interviews, 155 of them were unique guests. And, wow, it's just been an incredible journey, an incredible experience. And I thought that I would take the opportunity today to go over some of the people I've spoken with in the last 3 years, what I learned from some of them, what some of my highlights were. And I certainly would love to hear from you sometime about what you've enjoyed about this show and maybe some of the interviews that you heard that made a difference in your life. And you can contact me at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the intro to this show. I've been playing that at the beginning of the show ever since we started, and I have to thank my brother for that, Barry Hartglass. You can find him at barryhartglass.com. He's a composer, musician, and a really nice vegan guy. And it's just nice to listen to that tune every week. I guess I've been listening to it over 145 times. However it goes. Anyway, so many great things have gone on during this show. I've met a lot of wonderful people. I put that in quotation marks because some of these people that I feel like I know really well now, I've never seen them in person. But that's the beauty of the internet. I've always been a fan of radio. And I think there was a time where I thought maybe radio was going to disappear as we became more high-tech and video and all kinds of things were growing. But now with the internet, it's really exploding. And what I love about it is you have the opportunity either to really lie back and focus only on one thing, which is listening, or you can multitask and do a number of other things and also listen. And I'm not a big television watcher, not a big video watcher, but I love listening. And so I'm really glad to be a part of this whole Progressive Radio Network experience. Okay, so I'm looking at this long list of different people I've spoke with, and I've kind of tagged a number of people that I thought were worth mentioning, and I don't know if I'm going to be able, if I spend a minute on each of them, that's only 60, and when there's 145, I would run out of time. So I tried to highlight select ones, and we'll see how far we get. Okay, so one of the first people I spoke with on It's All About Food was Pamela Rice. Actually, she was my first guest, and she is the author of 101 Reasons I'm a Vegetarian. She was one of these early activists that really concisely put together lots of different reasons, 101 of them, and revised it. And this came out in the days when we didn't have access to the internet. And this is what's really amazing about this movement, this health movement, is that it's really exploding now that we have the internet and so many people are accessing it and looking for information. But before we had it, there were people out there putting pieces of information together, and it created a base. It created a ground of information that people could build upon. And now we're starting to see all this exponential growth, which is really, really exciting. So Pamela Rice was in there in the beginning. I believe that she was influenced by John Robbins, the author of Diet for New America. And I'll have to go back and listen to that interview to make sure. But one of the great things that she's doing now is she has taken the concept of the Veggie Pride Parade that was started in Paris earlier in the decade, and she does it annually in New York City. And there'll be one coming up in May, and my nonprofit will be there, Responsible Eating and Living. Great event in New York City. You can hear speakers and find out what's new and exciting in the plant world. So I'm really grateful to her. Another great activist is Richard Schwartz, and he puts out a lot of information about the reasons to be vegetarian from a Jewish perspective. And it's really interesting when you get religion into the mix. Personally, I'm not a religious person. I was raised in a Jewish environment, but I just choose to be vegan. That's my politics. That's my religion. But Richard Schwartz, has put together some books, a website, I think it's jewishveg.org, with lots of very compelling information from literature like the Bible that people of the Jewish faith would respect and find interesting enough to pay attention to. But there's lots of interesting stuff in the religious realm that points to eating a plant-based diet. It's all about thou shalt not kill, right? What does that mean? Does that just mean white men? Does that mean all people? Does that mean animals? I really like to think about those things that people repeat over and over in their prayers and in their thoughts. And he's got a lot of great information from that perspective. Will Tuttle. Are you familiar with Will Tuttle? Really a very gentle, peaceful, compassionate, how many other nice words can I come out with for him? He's the author of The World Peace Diet. I've spoken with him twice on this show. It's all about food. And he and his wife just travel around the country speaking and promoting all the concepts in The World Peace Diet. And basically, he, like many, many others, believe that the way we treat each other and the way we treat other cities, other towns, other countries, the way we deal with everything in this world is related to what we eat. And when we open ourselves up to considering plants as food and animals not as food, we open the possibilities to creating a more compassionate world and a world of peace. And his book is definitely one of the tops on my list. Lovely, lovely book. And he's one of these people, you know, I tend to be someone who does too many things, maybe a Jane of all trades. And I'm involved in one thing here and one thing there and trying to do all kinds of different things. That's the way I am. That's the way I've always been, and I'm not planning on changing it at this moment. Will Tuttle is focused on telling his story about the World Peace Diet. He and his wife travel around. They live very simply. He speaks wherever he can. He's also a musician. He sings and plays piano, but his focus is on spreading this message. He lives very simply and very, very admirable to see someone who is so intent on this message and getting it out in a specific way. Carol Adams, another wonderful activist and author. She's written a number of different books. Sexual Politics of Meat is probably the most popular. She's an ecofeminist and ties together all different kinds of interesting concepts in the world that have to do with, again, how we eat and how we treat each other. And one of the things that I loved or remembered about in her books is seeing all the advertising that goes on in the world where we go back and forth between promoting animals and women in a very similar way. And she's, I never look at advertising anymore ever since I've read her books, but you so often see pieces of meat looking like a voluptuous woman in different ways, and also women looking like animals. And it just goes back and forth, reinforcing the exploitation of both. And her work is really brilliant and incredible. Carol Adams, Sexual Politics of Meat. And then we talked with Mark Rifkin, who is another wonderful person, and he became a registered dietitian, super knowledgeable about food, and I've had him on the show a number of times, and I probably should bring him back because I haven't talked to him in a while. And then, of course, Brendan Brazier, he was on early in June of 2009, and he has really done a lot since that time. He is the author of The Thrive Diet. He's had a number of books and revisions on The Thrive Diet. And he's also the, I believe, the creator of the Vega product, which is a plant-based meal powder. And you can put it in smoothies. It's useful for a lot of different applications. I'm sure a lot of athletes use it, especially when they look at Brendan Brazier and see what an amazing athlete he has been and the accomplishments that he's done. I personally used it when I was going through cancer treatment in 2006 and 2007 as a way to make sure I got all the nutrition I needed and was light and gentle on my stomach going through chemotherapy. And I was really grateful to have that product. Brendan Brazier, really a really beautiful example. One of the things I like, I love, of course I want people to embrace the plant-based diet. I would love to see this peaceful planet where we don't exploit animals in factory farms. I would love to see no one dying of heart disease and diabetes and reduce the risk significantly of cancer so that we can really focus on cures for the ones that we don't know why they're caused. There are so many diseases we do know why they're caused, and yet we continue to dump all kinds of funding into finding cures for these things that can be prevented. And when there were people out there like Brendan Brazier, someone who is a model example of someone who looks really great, glows, physically fit, and is a lovely human being, those are my favorite representatives of people spreading the message about a plant-based diet. Okay, then we spoke with, gosh, there were so many people, Stefan Grollo and Megan Kelly up in Canada. They are organic farmers, and what's special about what they're doing with organic farming is they're into what's called veganics. And you may or may not have thought about it, but farming requires the care, the nurturing of soil. And there's a lot of different methods to go about nurturing soil, some good ways and some not so good ways. The industrial agriculture, unfortunately, really sucks the life, literally, out of the soil that food is grown in, to the point where some of that soil may not be able to grow food at some point. And what we end up doing is covering all of that, those fields with lots of petrochemical-based fertilizers. And it's a drain on the resource of petrochemicals, and it's also not the ideal for the soil. And the plants, the food that's grown in that soil, is impacted negatively. The nutritional value isn't as good, etc. And we know with organic farming, there are more natural nurturing ways to take care of the soil that we need so desperately to grow our food. And that includes letting a field rest for a season. That includes growing different plants in a particular field so that some plants will take out certain nutrients and put other nutrients back and vice versa. So there are complementary different plants that can be grown in the same area, keeping the soil fertile. And then there are natural fertilizers, and some organic farmers will use fertilizers from animals, bone, char, bone, and animal manure, of course. And there are a number of people, and it's growing, where they do farming without manure. It's called veganics. They don't use any animal products on the soil. And what I learned about this particular program is that there were people that developed this in Europe, probably in other places too, but they did it because they were not around animals. They did not have access to animal manure and learned how to feed the soil without it. But now there are people coming from it from another angle because they don't want to use animal products for a variety of reasons. Certainly animals that come from factory farms and are fed with industrial foods, conventional foods, foods that are grown with pesticides and herbicides, their manure is going to be, like their flesh, concentrated with the toxic chemicals that you don't want to put in your body. So if you're using manure that contains a lot of these contaminants, it's going to get into the food, and then you can eat it. And so there are people that are doing things veganically using a variety of different compost materials from plant sources to nourish their soil. And that's what that show was about. And that was back in July 2009. It was really an interesting program. Then there was, I spoke with Jo Stepaniak, and that was really delightful. She's one of the people who put out a number of different cookbooks. I haven't seen a new one from her recently, but I think one of them has really been the base for a lot of people. Actually, I think there were two of them. One was about sauces, and I'm trying to think if I'm confusing two of her books or if they're the same. But just some basic technique. She had a whole recipe book full of how to make dips and sauces, and I think it was kind of helping move the bar in terms of how we all thought about flavoring plant food using vinegars and silken tofu and a variety of different flavors to make flavorful toppings and sauces. You know, a plate of steamed vegetables is great, and I love it, especially if the vegetables are organic and fresh. But sometimes it's nice to have a dip or a sauce, and there are so many different ones, and I think Jo Stepaniak was really essential with her book, getting us on the path of easy-to-make, delicious sauces and dips. Okay, then Victoria Moran, she's got a new book coming out, Main Street Vegan, and another lovely, lovely person just trying to make this world a better place. She's written numerous books, The Love Power Diet, and often talks about what's in us internally. Many people struggle with weight. And she, along with numerous other people, talk about how it's not just food. It's connecting the dots. It's realizing what it is we need to fill the hole, fill the void that's inside of us. And she's written extensively on this and talked about it, and we talked a bit about that on my August 19, 2009 show. That's something many, many people struggle with over and over. Another one was Ruby Roth, who wrote a book for children. And I was really curious to talk to her because when I had first heard about it, the book's called Why We Don't Eat Animals, or We Don't Eat Animals. It's a little children's book, and the way she described it, it's targeted for young children as old as six, maybe, and older. And it's a picture book, beautifully illustrated, and it talks about factory farming. And this is really a taboo subject with many parents with young children, where even parents that are vegetarian and vegan don't want to talk to their children about animal slaughter. It's a very, very unpleasant subject. And many will say that, okay, if you don't want to tell your children the truth, if you don't want to tell your children where their food comes from because you know that it's horrible, then why do you continue to eat meat and dairy products? It's a very dark story, what we do in factory farms and kids love stories about animals, and we have these continued myths of stories of Dick and Jane and Spot and going on the farm and seeing the cows and the chickens roam freely and romping and happily. And that's fiction for the most part. Most animals grown today for food are grown in factory farms, crammed, never seen the light of day, treated horribly, separated from their babies at birth. It's miserable. And we don't want to tell our children that story because we know inside it's a horrible thing. And many people have been convinced or have been convincing themselves for a long time that that's okay. So we don't want to share that story with our children. And so Ruby Roth came up with a book that you can share that story with children in a way that's appropriate, age appropriate for them, in order to introduce and explain to some children why other children don't eat meat. I really enjoyed that book, and I enjoyed talking with her. Okay, moving right along. So many great people. Oh, yeah, so I spoke with Joseph Connolly, December of 2009. And he's done amazing things. He is the editor and the founder of Veg News Magazine. And I'm sure that part of it is the right place at the right time. We definitely needed a vegan magazine to provide all kinds of information and positive stories and a vehicle for advertising of vegan products. All those kind of came together at the same time. There's been an explosion of vegan food products. I know things used to come a lot from California, and there's certainly a lot of vegetarian and vegan food products that come from California. But Chicago and Brooklyn are also two places where entrepreneurs specifically making vegan products are really exploding. And they need a vehicle. They need a place to advertise their products and get a targeted community of people that are interested. And Veg News Magazine certainly filled that need very well. There are other places that are doing it too, but this is really a focused, targeted community. And I have to happily say that my organization, Responsible Eating and Living, was featured in Veg News in their 2011 November-December Best of issue, where one of the fun things that they do is have competitions for the best of a variety of different vegan products, cookbooks, cookies, personal items, podcasts, nonprofits. They have all kinds of competitions, and it's a fun issue. And we were featured in their 10 nonprofits you need to know about. So I have to thank Joe for that. My brother was also featured a couple of times in their magazine. They have a very popular wedding issue where they show couples having complete vegan weddings, and they share the menu and pictures from the wedding. And that's a lovely, lovely thing. So my brother had a vegan wedding, and he was in one of their issues a while ago, 7-8 years ago. Okay. There's so many. What I really love about this show is I get to talk to so many different people that are doing great things. And it's so easy to get bogged down and think about all the things that are wrong in the world. It's so easy. Just turn on CNN and listen. And yet at the same time, there are wonderful things that are happening. And I think if we heard more about the wonderful things and focus more on the wonderful things, I think a lot of us would get our heads out of the sand and start doing more good. Certainly, I know for myself, talking to some of these people, even on days when I may have been tired and not really feeling like I wanted to do anything, I've always been energized and inspired to hear about the great work of so many other people. And so many of these people do it as a volunteer. They do it without any thought of compensation, financial compensation. Many people do it because they can't see doing anything else. They feel a need to share information. They feel a need to share a story. They feel a need to be part of this conversation about how to make this world a better place. It's so, so inspiring. Let's see, moving down my list of 168 interviews, I spoke with Alexandra Jameson, and you may remember her in the movie, oh, why isn't escaping me, with Matt Spurlock. Super Size Me. She was the one who brought her partner back to health after he ate McDonald's every day, 3 days a week. And she's a delightful person and has put together a few books on healthy eating, how to, very sensible. I like to recommend her book for people that are looking for a book on how to move to a plant-based diet. It's very friendly. It's very easy. It's very filled with common sense. And she also does some coaching, I think, and consulting in New York for people that need more one-on-one type of information. And I had her on two shows. And maybe I should have her back. Another great, great activist. Let's see. And then I spoke with Martin Rowe. Martin Rowe, you may not know about him because he's often behind the scenes. He is a publisher, and he has created Lantern Books. And Lantern Books, for so many, has been a great opportunity to get their books published. Lantern Books publishes nonfiction, and many, many vegetarian and vegan activists have published through Lantern Books and have been able to get their books on paper and in press, which have enabled them to have a better platform for their message. And so many great books have come out of Lantern Books, and I've interviewed lots of different authors from Lantern on this show. Everybody has a part to play. Do you know what your part is? I'm just asking. It's just been a very amazing experience. And for me, there have been things that I've wanted to do throughout my life, and hosting a number of different shows was never something that was on my list. It wasn't something that I ever thought about. I became an activist over time, first becoming a vegetarian at 15 because I didn't want to eat animals. And a lot of us discover, whether we want to or not, we have to defend ourselves. People always ask why we do what we do, especially when we sit down at the table for something to eat, because if we're not eating what everyone else is eating, the questions fly, the stares start. I think it's improving in some locations where there's a bigger movement towards healthier, more compassionate eating. Unfortunately, there are places, pockets, where people aren't as aware of what's going on, which blows me away that still there are people that are clueless about healthy eating and what's going on with factory farms. And so I just started learning as a teenager because, one, people were telling me what I was doing wasn't healthy, and two, people were very antagonistic towards me. I realize now that it was in some ways defensive, because I think a lot of us have these compassionate feelings and don't really want to kill. And when we learn that we don't need to kill other living beings, other animals, in order to live healthy and thrive, gosh, it just lifts a whole spiritual load off of your shoulders. Okay, I have a lot more to go over, a lot more to talk about, but let's take a quick break. I'm going to have a little mate break, and we'll be right back. Hi, I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I have just been taking a little mate break. Have you ever had yerba mate? I just finished the last tea bag from a box that I had brought back from Buenos Aires when I was there. Not this summer, but last summer, I guess 2010, brought a big box back with me of some yerba mate, which I drank a lot of in Buenos Aires. And you can get it here, of course. It's a popular tea, especially in the health food stores. And I usually sprinkle a little stevia in it. And I do that because of the things that I learned when I spoke with Jim May back, when did I talk to Jim May on this show? I've got this whole spreadsheet of different people. September 2010, and he's the founder of Sweet Leaf Stevia, and I learned so much from that show. Number one, I learned that it's stevia and not stevia. Now, that could be that it's because the word comes from one of these South American, Central American locations where they say it's stevia, but we brought it over to this country, and a lot of people call it stevia. Well, Jim May let me know that it was called stevia, and so that's what I call it, stevia. And he tells a very compelling, a very sad story with a somewhat happy ending about the decades that he worked at trying to get stevia approved in this country as a food and a sweetener, and all the politics behind it taking so long to get this in our hands as a sugar-free, reasonably healthy alternative to sugar. And now you can get it. And there are also some major corporations that have gotten into the scene of using stevia as a sweetener, and I prefer to use sweet leaf stevia because, from what Jim told me on that show, is how they manufacture it, and it's basically they do some very simple processing to get their stevia, and they get it from sources in Uruguay, I think, that they have a lot of confidence in how they're grown, whereas the corporations that sell products with stevia in it are not completely stevia, and they contain a lot of manufactured synthetic ingredients, not the same product. So I enjoy using sweet leaf stevia. I don't use it a lot. I don't bake with it when I'm cooking and making sweets. I have no problem using the vegan version of sugar, evaporated cane juice or agave or maple syrup. I just don't need a lot of sweetener in my daily life. It's for treats. But I do like to use the stevia with the yerba mate just because it seems to be, they seem to go very well together. And so I'm enjoying that right now. Something that he told me about on that show, he discussed caffeine, theine, and matine. And I have since kind of learned that maybe what he was telling me wasn't entirely correct, because there have been discussions that matine, which is from mate, and theine from tea, and caffeine from coffee are different and have different effects, where theine and matine may not have the same negative effects as caffeine. I have since read that they're all just different names for the same thing. But I think what's different is that it's not the caffeine in coffee that's so problematic. It's all the other organic chemicals and carcinogens that you find in coffee, whereas tea and mate have lots of health-promoting elements like antioxidants and things that are good for us. I like to drink tea, black, green, and mate. Those are my preferred hot beverages. Anyway, Jim May, that was a great, great interview back in September of 2010. And, of course, I spoke to John Robbins back in June of 2010 when his newest book, The New Good Life, came out. And so many of the people that I've spoken to on this show, It's All About Food, were influenced by John Robbins and his groundbreaking bestseller, Diet for a New America, which came out in 1987. Gosh, it's so hard to believe that it was so long ago. And he came out with a number of other great books, The Food Revolution, and I believe there's going to be a revised book coming out soon. But he was one of the leaders that connected the dots between our food choices and the impact on health, environment, and animals. And so many people have been inspired and have gone so much further once they had that ground to hold them up. And Responsible Eating and Living, my nonprofit, our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, all one word. We're going to be exhibiting in the Washington Dulles, Washington, D.C. area, right near the Washington Dulles Airport at the Take Back Your Health Conference, April 15th and 16th. So if you're in that area, we would love to see you. And John Robbins will be speaking there. It's going to be very, very exciting. It's an interesting conference. It's not an entirely vegan conference. There are speakers that talk on nutrition, I guess, from a holistic and alternative point of view. And so the vegan point of view is presented as well as some other points of view that I personally don't agree with. But this is America, and everybody has to have their say. So we'll be there at the Take Back Your Health Conference with John Robbins. And so many cookbook authors. I've had, so many of them on this show. And the thing that I do when I interview someone that has a book, either a nonfiction book or a how-to book or a cookbook, I read them. I read them from cover to cover before I talk to them. And so this has really been an educational exercise for me, because I can't talk about something unless I know what I'm talking about. And reading a cookbook is something that I never did before I started this show. I pretty much thumbed my way through and found something that looked interesting, or if I was looking for something particular, I might go into the index of a book and look for a recipe. And I really enjoyed reading cookbooks, and I have a whole different respect and feeling for the author when I've read their story. So some of the cookbooks that I've enjoyed reading and ultimately using, one of them was with Sharon Valenchik. Sharon Valenchik has a vegan dessert cookbook called Sweet Utopia. And one of my favorite things in that book was the sesame cookie. Incredible. I'm a big fan of sesame butter, sesame tahini, and the sesame cookie is such a winner. I have to confess that I took her recipe and I made it gluten-free. So I have a gluten-free vegan sesame cookie recipe. Of course, it's on the responsibleeatingandliving.com website, and it's one of my very, very favorites. It's fun to get a treat out of all of this. And lots of other really wonderful cookbooks. Another one that I really loved, and I'm looking for the title of it, Mark Reinfeld. Where is that book? Well, I love Asian food. And when you go out and eat Asian food in a restaurant, I do from time to time, there are two things that someone like myself who's trying to eat as clean as possible, I get challenged with: too much oil and too much salt or soy sauce. And so I like to cook at home, and I find the Asian cooking requires, how do I want to say this? It's a little more challenging. I don't have I have the desire for Asian food in my blood, but not the desire or the knowledge of how to make it. And so that's where cookbooks come in handy for me. And what was the name of the cookbook that I'm talking about? Well, there was one by Chat Ming Kwan. I talked to him, and he has several books. One is called Asian Fusion. And then the other one that I'm thinking of, scrolling along. Oh, well, I don't see it, but if I think about it, I will certainly let you know. And then there are a number of authors whose books just blew me away, and I wanted to talk about some of them because if you haven't read your book, their books, I highly, 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 highly recommend it. David Kirby is the author of Animal Factory. And this was a really great book, and I got to meet him because I didn't know this, but he is from the New York City area. And what's interesting about this book is this man is not a vegan. He chooses to eat, I think, what he would call humanely, promoting the grass-fed, free-range animal concept. But the book is really excellent whether you're just interested in factory farming, vegetarian or not. He talks about what's going on from a human perspective. And how many times have I heard when I talk to people about being vegetarian or vegan, one of the responses is, you care so much about animals, but you don't care about people. And that's so far from the truth, because once you realize what's going on in the world with factory farming and the production of animals for food, you realize that it's certainly not good for the animals, and it's not good for humans either. And so working towards getting people on a plant-based diet is better for the animals, but it's better for people, and it's better for the planet. And most of the people I know that are in this movement care about both people who are animals and or all the other animals. But this book, Animal Factory by David Kirby, is about different small communities where factory farms came in and the work that they did to try and prevent these businesses coming in, the lies that they were told by their local governments and the promoters of these businesses about how it would improve their community, the things that they would get from it, the jobs that it would create, and all of these ended up being lies. And there are a number of different really heartbreaking stories about people and their communities, the farms. You read about the stench that comes out of these factory farms. You read about the contamination of the water from the piles of lagoons, the lagoons which are contain manure, and how they're not maintained properly and they get into the local water supply either during snowstorms or rainstorms or just because they're just so full, and people going out of business as a result, the fish in local streams being affected, dying and getting sick. It was just a heart-wrenching story, and the focus was on people and their communities, not even what was going on with the animals that were in these factories that were being manufactured for food. And so I think it was a very, very important book, and it was great to meet him. Let's see. Of course, I spoke with Marion Nissel, who has a new book out on calories. She's known for her work with food politics, and she is not a vegan as well, but she does talk about promoting healthy food, and her voice is a very important one in this movement. Another fun one was the interview with Joe Cross. He's a filmmaker, and he did the film Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Have you seen it? You can see it on Netflix for... If you're a member of Netflix, I think it's one of the Watch Now free live streaming options. It was an interesting film where this Australian came up to the United States and decided he wanted to lose weight, and he did it by juicing for 60 days. And he talks about the people that he met and this one very obese man that he connected with that he said he would help if the man was interested. And then the film continues with the story about this new man who goes through the similar kind of practice of juicing. It's an interesting message about the importance of whole plant-based foods and how it can help us maintain our weight. And I'm a big proponent of juicing. I know, I believe it really saved my life when I went through my cancer experience. But I think there could be some mixed messages with this film, and it's I think it's important to clarify that juicing should not be used for weight loss per se. It should be used to increase the amount of nutrition that you're getting to boost your immune system, but it should be in addition to a healthy plant-based diet. It should not be instead of. It should not be as a quick fix so that that will allow you to consume unhealthy food. And I'm not sure that that message was clear in that film, but I'm just going to say it here because it was important to me. Okay, a lot of great films are coming out, and this is all part of everybody doing what they're moved to do to make this world a better place. Of course, Forks Over Knives is another one that's gotten a lot of popularity, and I had T. Colin Campbell, Caldwell Esselstyn, and Brian Wendell, the filmmaker, on one show back in April of 2011. T. Colin Campbell is the author of The China Study, and what I loved about this film with Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. T. Colin Campbell, both of these men have had great careers, and here they are, I believe they're in their 70s now, both slim, silver-haired, and stunning, and they just don't stop. They keep promoting this message, and I don't know about Dr. Esselstyn. I know he's had a pretty impressive career as a surgeon. Dr. T. Colin Campbell has served on numbers of panels and worked at Cornell University for a long time, but definitely ups and downs with knowing such important information and not getting the response from your colleagues or the government or the people that you think should be sharing this information, and decade after decade after decade, not getting your due. And finally, these guys are getting their due, and that's really good news. And I love to see the book based on the film Forks Over Knives by Gene Stone, who I also had on It's All About Food. That's been on the New York Times bestseller list for a very long time. The other book that's been on the New York Times bestseller list, of course, is Eat to Live by Dr. Joel Fuhrman. I talk about him a lot on this show, and we had him on the show, not too long ago. But these are really great people who are doing really wonderful things. We don't have much time left. I wanted to talk about something that I thought was really amusing. So one of the things that I've been saying in this show and many other times is that we're definitely seeing an exponential change in people's attitude towards healthy diets and the knowledge that people have with cookbooks and other books and products. It's really great. And so now on the New York Times, they're actually having a contest, and this really shows you how the world is changing. It came out just a few days ago, March 20th, so that was yesterday. The Ethicist column, if you're familiar with New York, the New York Times, they're having a calling all carnivores, tell us why it's ethical to eat meat, a contest, and they've got some really interesting judges, including Jonathan Safran Foer, the author of Eating Animals, Peter Singer, and who wrote Animal Liberation, and really decades ago got a lot of dialogue started in terms of how we treat animals. And Michael Pollan, Mark Bittman, these are guys that are promoting healthy organic foods, but they're still eating animal products. And so there's this interesting dialogue going on in a competition, which you would never have seen before. Vegetarians have had to defend ourselves for so long, and now they're kind of turning the table with a competition that's saying, okay, meat eaters, well, they're saying calling all carnivores, but they're actually omnivores. Humans are not carnivores. They want to know why it's ethical to eat meat, and whatever the response is, I don't know how important it is. I'm just glad that the dialogue is out there, and the world is definitely changing for good. Well, let's see. Is there anybody else? So many different people. So many wonderful interviews. You know, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and go to the Real Radio tab, scroll down to It's All About Food and Real Interviews, and you can listen to any of these, which are archived the last 3 years' worth of programming. Another couple of great people I really have great respect for, I spoke with Mia McDonald, who has a nonprofit called Brighter Green, and she is going around the world talking to people and trying to make change in third world countries when it comes to environment and food. And let's see. And, you know, we're just going to keep doing more and more and more, because there are lots of people doing great work, and we got to keep talking about it, and I feel very privileged that I have the opportunity to do this. I've got a bookshelf that is overflowing with too many books, though. There are just too many to read from this. Okay, well, you've been listening to me. I'm Karen Hartglass, and the show is It's All About Food, where I get to talk about my favorite subject, food. And thanks for listening today. It's kind of been a celebration of 3 years of talking about healthy plant-based food. So let me know what your favorite shows have been on It's All About Food. I'd love to hear from you. info@realmeals.org. Thanks so much for listening, and have a delicious week.